He's got a mic, and he's in a mood. Buckle up, Buttercup. You're listening to The Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's The Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Hey, welcome to the program. It's me, it's The Ron Van Dam Show, and I'm Ron Van Dam. I can prove it, I'm Ron Van Dam. Other than that, I got nothing. Welcome to the program. Here's the way this is going to work. I talk for an exorbitant amount of time, which isn't really all that long. You sit in the chair, shut up, eat a sandwich, just take it easy. You've worked hard enough. I'll take it from here. How you doing? I've said it before, I'm the only talk show host that cares how you're doing. Other talk show hosts, they just want to make money and have you listen. No, I really care about you. Sorry. I tried to say that with a straight face. There are two kinds of people that roam the earth here, two kinds of human beings. There are those that love everybody and everything and wish so much that they could give you a hug right now. And then there's the other people, such as myself, who wonder, what the hell am I doing on this planet? The other people look like me, they have human features, but mentally, the hell's going on with them? Some people just don't get it. They never evolved into intelligence. It's incredible. I don't understand. Then there are people that totally get it. You say anything, they say, yeah, I get it. I understand you. I get it. Those are my people. There's not many of them. I don't know where they all went. Kind of plays itself out when I meet somebody and we're talking for the first time and I say, hey, how you doing there? Do you have any children? Yes, I have five kids. You have five? Is that allowed by law? I think you're only supposed to replace yourself. I don't think you're supposed to start a baseball team. Five kids? Why? Well, I think that's our purpose in life. To have children. Oh, yeah, but not a lot of them. Don't you understand? That makes no sense. Five? I'm sorry to insult you if you have five children, but I gotta say, something went wrong somewhere. I mean, I don't understand. I just don't get it. And that's where the division comes in. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. I'll reiterate that just in case you thought I might have changed in the interim. But no, it's still me. I do care about you. At least I say I do, and perception is 9/10 of the law, so that's good enough. You take it easy. I won't be serving any food during this program. If you want something to eat, get up off your ass and get it yourself. I'm sorry to be so crass about that, but I can't help you as far as that's concerned. I've interviewed people who are chefs and own restaurants and are great cooks and things and come up with some great recipes. That's between you and them. I'm not cooking for you. I'm not cooking for you. Okay. What's happened to the price of groceries, by the way? Eggs yesterday, $3. $3 for a dozen eggs. Wow. Really? Are the chickens working any harder than they were before? What's going on with that? Who's hoarding eggs? Unless there's contaminated chicken somewhere, which is a possibility. But then everything's going up in price. Everything. Prostitutes charging double now. Well, they have to because business is down big time. Do you remember back? I don't know how old you are. Do you remember back in the 70s and 80s? Millennials don't even know what century I'm talking about. No, not the 1670s. Oh, my God. There was a period of time where in society we had a thing called free love, which to me meant you didn't have to pay for it for a change. But free love was when you met somebody in a restaurant, chances were in about an hour you'd be in somebody's apartment having wild, passionate sex. And that actually happened for about a decade. Until people started getting sexual diseases, and then AIDS came around, and they said, maybe this isn't a good idea, and they stopped doing that. But I guess the bottom line is take advantage of your generation as long as you can. All right, here's something that before I go any further, what a wonderful guest I have coming up later in the program. David Ignatius is going to join us. He's an author. He's an MSNBC contributor. He's been on every show. He's with some of the biggest papers of all on their staff. He's a very intelligent man. I respect him. I've thought he was a very interesting individual for quite some time. He's come out with a new book. And we're going to talk to him a little bit later in the program. You're probably familiar with him. Anyway, what I regret now is I never had a journal when I was growing up. Not the Wall Street Journal, but I never had a journal. I never had a diary. And how much I wish I did. Wouldn't it be fun right now with nothing to do for most of us? To open up that journal and go back to other decades and find out, like, jot down what you were thinking and what you were eating and how much you weighed and your impressions of life, what you thought of the teacher in the schoolroom, things that were on your mind that were important to you, your attitude, your love of life, your hatred of life, problems you were going through, how you resolved them, what you looked like, what your impression of yourself was, your parents, your friends. Wouldn't that have been fascinating? I didn't do that. I did not keep a diary or a journal. I so much wish I did. And you know what? It's never too late, especially during these times. It's fairly interesting. Doesn't it feel like we are participants in a giant social experiment? Mm-hmm. It does feel like that, doesn't it? I just wanted to say that. Anyway, start jotting things down. Start jotting down what you're going through on a daily basis, your feelings, your fears, your comforts, your joys, your weaknesses. Jot them all down, what you had for dinner, how much you weigh, whatever the case may be. Jot it down. I guarantee you that in a year or two from now, if you go back and look at your journal, you'll find it fascinating. Fascinating. Especially when you get older and you start to forget stuff. Like where you put your keys. Did I take my pills today? That kind of thing. Journals are great for that. It shows your development, your mental development, your physical development, all that kind of stuff. Do you have an appointment book? I know what you're saying. You have no appointments. I get it. That's not the point. But that's something that has the days marked off there in various columns on various pages in an appointment book. And just jot down in there what you're feeling, what you did. And it'll be fascinating. I guarantee you. That's a little tip. You want a little tip? What would you want? A couple of bucks? Is that kind of tip you're looking for? Ain't gonna happen, honey. Ain't gonna happen. I wish I had done that as a child. Apparently, young girls did that. They kept diaries, and they were very personal. Diaries and journals are—they're only good for you. They're not. Nobody cares about what you did throughout your life. No, nobody cares that you had a tuna fish sandwich on November 9th, 1982. But to you, that would be fascinating. I like tuna. I hate tuna, but I was eating tuna sandwiches. Did I put mayonnaise on it? Let me look at my journal. Yes, I did put mayonnaise on it. That would be fascinating. How you felt about life and society. Your job. Did you like your job? Did you hate your job? What did you do on a particular day that really made you feel wonderful about yourself or horrible about yourself? That would have been fascinating, but I never kept a journal. I never kept a diary. Nobody else cares. Nobody else cares. If you showed your journal, your diary to somebody else, they'd say, this is the most boring thing I've ever seen in my life. It's only valuable to you. I should have done that. There's a lot of things I should have. If I could go back in time, I would change a lot of things, but I wouldn't. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, don't you? Yeah. I'd change a lot of things, but I wouldn't. The base I would keep. The little things I would change. Maybe I'd be in a different direction right now. Millennials, I spent my young adulthood, I couldn't say that properly, trying to find myself. That was a big thing when I was growing up. People were walking around trying to find themselves. They were just wandering in various directions. Did you find yourself yet? No, I'm still looking. Did you look over there? Look behind the couch, under the cushions. That's usually where you are. Nah, I'm still trying to find myself. I want a purpose in life. You want what? I want a purpose. See, it took me a number of years to figure out that my purpose in life was to have no purpose. It was all right in front of me. I'm extremely lazy. And I realized I'm good at that. I'm good at not doing stuff. I suck at doing things. I can't assemble furniture or toys or bicycles or anything. I suck at that. You can give me all the instructions you want. It's not going to happen. There's going to be like 20 pieces left over. I suck at it. I'm bad at doing things. I decided to paint one of my walls in my office as an accent wall. They call it an accent wall. What it really means is it's a wall that you decided to paint, but not the whole thing. Painting the whole room, that's a pain in the ass. I can do one wall. Well, call it an accent wall. It's just I'm really lazy. I don't want to do the whole place. That's all it is. But I didn't even do that well. When I was painting, I thought I was doing a great job. Then the thing dried, and it's like, whoa. A, wrong color. B, it's streaked. No, I'm just not good at doing things, and that's my calling. It's obvious. Ron, what do you do for a living? Basically as little as I can. And I'm so good at that. I am so good at putting things off, it's not funny. I'm great at it. No one's better than me. I had an argument with somebody a couple of months ago. And we were arguing who was lazier. I'll always win that argument. I throw out examples of what I don't do, what I intend to do, and what, as a result, I don't do. And I always win. The other person just gives up. They end up saying, yeah, you're right. You are lazier than I am. I didn't think it was possible. Yeah, in your face. In your face, I am the laziest. Yeah, I should have a t-shirt printed up that says laziest person in the world. And wear that t-shirt proudly, because it's what I do. Yeah. No argument there. You can't even say, arguably, Ron is the laziest person I've ever met. It's not arguably. There's no argument. I am. Just know what you're good at is all I'm saying. Actually, I'm good at quite a few things, but I try to limit myself to those things. These people that walk around trying to say, I want to be good at everything. I want to climb mountains. I want to write books. I want to be a chef. I want to have 5 children. I want to build cars. I want to change my own oil. I want to make the world a better place. All right, listen. That's too much. You can't do everything well. You can't do everything well. Then there are people who do nothing well at all. I do some things well. Donald Trump, nothing at all. Doesn't do anything well at all. Nothing. An example, Wikipedia, look it up, his picture. I got to start writing a journal, man. I do. When I was doing stand-up comedy, why isn't there sit-down comedy? I think there is, but they don't call it that. It's still stand-up, even though you're not standing up, you're sitting down. When I was doing stand-up comedy, I anytime something popped into my head that was funny or a subject matter that I knew I could take off on that subject and go on forever, humorously, I would jot it down. And so in a sense, that was like a journal. I do have a journal of funny ideas that I've had throughout my life. There is such a thing. And I go back to it and I use it every once in a while. I'll do bits that were popular 10, 15 years ago. I'll clean them up, modernize them for the millennials, and I'll do the bits that are 10 years old. You have no freaking idea. You don't know how old the bit is. It worked. So I guess I'm capable of that as well. I can't sleep anymore. I can't. The older you get, the more stuff is on your mind. And then, you think you get older and there's less on your mind? No, it's more. You're taking a... It's that stupid CNN thing. It's that stupid CNN scroll. And that Fox News scroll and that MSNBC scroll are at the bottom of the screen. They're pounding your head full of information. I mean, it's great to have the information, but leave me alone already. Stop pounding me. My head can only take so much before it starts making a judgment. That scroll at the bottom of the screen on the 24-hour news shows, that scroll is... That's there to drive you crazy. That's to pound into your head. It's like cocaine. I'm going to give you so much information, you won't be able to not have it, and it will drive you insane. And at some point during your life, you're going to say to yourself, all that stuff that's scrolling at the bottom of the screen, they're just telling me about all the stuff that sucks. That's a things that suck scroll. That's what that is. I want to remind you, every second of every day, just how shitty things can be. Now, every once in a while, there'll be like when the stock market like climbs and you know, that's wonderful and stocks are doing well. That's a fleeting little thing. But the real scroll at the bottom of the screen, it's things that suck. People that murder other people, do horrible things to each other, that are being arrested. It's house fires. It's just all the horrible stuff that can happen scrolling at the bottom of the screen. I wish they would stop that. I don't like the scrolls of information, but there is some information that I do like. And that's from David Ignatius. He is he's an incredible guy. And he's written a new book. It's interesting. It's a thriller, actually. And it's fun. And it's based on the theme, something David and I agree upon, that the truth has just been muddled. The definition of truth is, wow. Times are changing, man. Let's speak to David Ignatius. David Ignatius joins us now. He's the author of The Paladin. And it's a fascinating thriller. David, if you probably don't know, is all over the place. You've probably seen him. He works with a lot of the broadcast stations as an expert. He's a prize-winning columnist for the Washington Post. He's covered just about all parts of the world, and especially various administrations that need to be clarified. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ron. It's nice to be with you.
My immediate question is, how do you ever have time to write a thriller?
That's been a little bit of an issue with my wife and three daughters, but that's kind of my hobby. I enjoy writing. Thank goodness I don't have a case of writer's block.
I guess you don't. This is his 10th CIA thriller. And it's interesting because we know what you do professionally and all your appearances, and it seems to me like you take real life and you put it into a situation. Well, what if we put that in a thriller mode, and there you have a book, because you've been surrounded by government thrillers for quite some time.
I've been watching the CIA covering the Middle East for part of the last 45 years, mm-hmm. and I do see things that I want to describe in more detail, mm-hmm. more complexity. My new book is an example of that. The Paladin is about the world that we're living in, where information is so easily manipulated, where we can't be sure when we see a piece of news whether it's been manipulated, mm-hmm. It's part of a deception campaign. And my hero in this book walks into the middle of that. He walks into a nightmare situation. He's a CIA officer himself. He's asked to penetrate a group that's creating essentially fake events, video and sound that look just like reality. And he, in the process, is taken down by that, hung out to dry. It's sort of the way I think a lot of us feel wandering in this information landscape where we just don't know what's real.
Sounds like a documentary of what's actually going on with this administration, but that's besides the point, or maybe it's not.
It's what we're all, I think every American, wherever you are on the political spectrum, just feels this sense of mistrust and to know what's true and what isn't, and that's the landscape that this book is set in.
Yeah. What scares me more is the people that trust that that's real. That's what scares me. And everybody else. This book, does it make us feel more knowledgeable about things that are going on, or does it tend to scare us a little bit?
Well, I think some of both. The more knowledgeable you get about how the world is working, the more concerned and frightened people should be about these tools of manipulation. I explained the technologies that my hero, Michael Dunn, is chasing when he's assigned to penetrate a supposedly journalistic organization in Europe. They're using the most modern technology to create images that look exactly like real images. Sound, voice, body movement. These things can all be done now in a computer. They're called deep fakes, and they're one of the scariest things that computer science has come up with. And I hate to say it, but these are now beginning to make their way into real life. So I want people to understand them, know what's coming at them, and it won't make us any less frightened, but it may make us smarter.
With the upcoming election, you don't know if that's going to be starting to be used as actual guns to win an election. I fear that it could.
Well, we don't know. I mean, imagine if last time, Ron, when the Hollywood Access tape surfaced late in the campaign, Donald Trump had said, "That's a fake. I was manufactured in the computer. It never happened."
Right.
Well, these days, as we know more about this technology, a lot of people would have believed him. And so I think, one of the dangers is that, false information will be injected into campaigns. Another danger is that people won't believe true information.
Yeah. Your lead character is Michael Dunn, I understand, in the book.
Michael Dunn is from a part of the world that fascinates me. He's from a mill town in Pennsylvania, McKeesport, which is just up the Monongahela River from Pittsburgh. It's one of those towns that just got obliterated when manufacturing began to move away from Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan. His hometown, he feels like, looks like a town that was defeated in a war. So he carries that emotion of a lot of people from that part of the world on his back as he enters the CIA. There's an anger in him that's part of what leads him into his troubles. But I found he's a Trump voter, I should say, in the beginning of the book. He's a guy who with that anger coming from Steel Town in Pennsylvania, feels like he wants to kind of change that Trump is proposing. It's not a political novel, but that's just a detail about his character. See, if people have read Hillbilly Elegy, wonderful book by J.D. Vance, this character has a little bit of that that anger, that sense of being from a place that's dispossessed.
Well, the book has been released recently, I understand.
It was published last week, and happy to say it's been, had some good reviews and had a chance to talk about it with people like you.
Excellent. Excellent. Are you working on something else? I don't know how you could, but are you?
You know, the answer is, of course I am. I do two columns a week. I'm working on a column I'll write today about defense issues, but I'm beginning to think about a new novel. This next one would be my 12th. And I told my wife recently, you know, an even dozen sounds like about it. Yeah. So, but I it would be fit. This is, it's a pleasure for me, Ron. I think that's the thing I'd say to you.
Yeah.
It's fun to write these books.
Yeah. You know, you're only two books short of a library.
Well, or at least a shelf.
At least a shelf. A big shelf. I enjoy you watching you on television with your commentary and the charts, which kind of break the cycle of mistrust because they show the facts, and I do appreciate what you do with that.
Well, that's show Morning Joe. People enjoy my friend Steve Ratner, who I grew up with, is Mr. Chart, but I'm right there with him, and we're trying to make sense of a world that's pretty hard to understand.
Yes, increasingly every day. And okay. All right. The book is called The Paladin. It's search for it. You'll find it. Is there a website?
So I have a davidignatius.com website that you can go to. You can buy the book there. You can buy the book from online from any of your local bookstores. We're trying so hard to stay afloat. I hope, I'm sure you got some really good bookstores for your listeners. And, you know, that's like our whole economy. We're wanting bookstores to make it through this. A lot of them, I fear, are going to shut down. So it's a good time to check out your independent bookstore online.
It is. But I think when this is all said and done, people are going to swarm stores more than they ever have before. I think it's going
That's
to
such
be
a nice thought.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait for the moment where we all kind of get out and you know, get back to these public places. I think we're going to enjoy life a lot for a while after this ends. Nice thought.
There's no question. Yeah, well, getting out of the house and saying, all right, enough with ordering online. I've done that, been there. Let's get out and let's start moving and experiencing. I think it's going to happen.
I'm with you.
David, thank you so much. We'll feature the link to your website on our show. And thank you again. Good talking to you and a pleasure and continued success.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Ron.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And there you have it for today. Thank you so much for listening. This has been fun. Here's the deal. I do this every single weekday. I know. I can't explain it either. Well, it's how I make my meager living. So join me again tomorrow. Brand new show. Until then, I wish you peace.